So before getting into the text, let's chant the invocation prayers together. Nigamakalpatarorgalitam phalam sukamukatamrita dravasam yutam pibata bhagavatam rasamalayam muhuraho rasika bhuvibhavukaha Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayam mudirayet Nashta prayeshu abadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavatyuttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya So text 38, it's a prose text, so it's not there on the board. So I'll just read the Sanskrit, then we can take it from the word meanings. Etavan loka vinashyo mana lakshana sanstibhir vichintitah kavibhisatu panchashat koti ganishtayasya ganishtasya Bhulokasya turya bhago ayam loko loka loko chalaha. Word to word meanings. Let's chant responsively. Ketavan, this much. Loka vinyashaha, the placing of different planets. Mana, with measurements. Lakshana, symptoms. Samstabihi, as well as with their different situations. Vichintitaha, established by scientific calculations. Kavibihi, by the learned scholars. Saha, that, tu, but. Panchasat koti, 500 million yojanas. Ganitasya, which is measured at. Bhugolasya, of the planetary systems known as Bhugoloka. Turiya bhagaha, 1/4. I am. This loka loka achalaha, the mountain known as loka loka. Translation: the learned scholars who are free from mistakes, illusions and propensities to cheat have thus described the planetary systems and their particular symptoms, measurements and locations. With great deliberation they have established the truth that the distance between Sumeru and the mountain known as Loka Loka is 1/4 of the diameter of the universe, or in other words, 125 million yojanas, 1 billion miles. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura has given accurate astronomical information about the location of the Loka Loka mountain, the movement of the sun globe and the distance between the sun and the circumference of the universe. However, the technical terms used in the astronomical calculations given by the Jyotirveda are difficult to translate in English. Therefore, to satisfy the reader, we may include the exact Sanskrit statement given by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura, which records the exact calculations regarding the universal affairs. This follows the whole Sanskrit commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, which I am not going to read and embarrass myself, but it is there as part of the purport. It's a big commentary, and anyone who wants to understand it can probably try to read it from the available English translation, which is Bhanumarat's translation. So let's chant the translation responsively. I will chant and you can repeat. Learned scholars who are free from mistakes, illusions, and the propensities to cheat have thus described the planetary systems and their particular symptoms, measurements, and locations. With great deliberation, they have established the truth that the distance between Sumeru and the mountain known as Loka-Loka is 1/4 of the diameter of the universe, or in other words, 125 million yojanas, 1 billion miles. Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gurun Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajadam Sagagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sagitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tatta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanusute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Krupa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Yiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschaitya Deshatarine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Mukham Kroti Vachanam Pundam Gayate Kripatam Hamande Shri Gurum Dinatarnam Pramananda Madhavam Shri Chaitanya Vishwam Namo Vishwaraya Krishna Prashtaya Vakreshim Teje Paka Swami Tamli Namacha Kandai Kavapya Nekvara Tamla Nyantarne Tathanchana Smriti Rishim Dushkaram Shukram Bhavay Prasprite Vipritam Syan Shri Chaitanya Namamitam So we have this very technical verse today to deal with, which actually describes the distances between Sumeru and the mountains known as Loka-Loka. So I want to just give a small introduction or recollect what is happening in the past two chapters. That in the previous chapter, we are talking about the Dvipas, and in this chapter also. So the previous chapter was all about Jambudvipa, which is covered with the salt water ocean, and the different varshas and the different deities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is being prayed by different great personalities who are residing in the different islands of Jambudvipa. Now, in this chapter, till now we have been seeing the other six dvipas, the Palakshadvipa, which is covered by, which is surrounded by the ocean of sugarcane juice, and where Surya is being prayed, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shri Krishna, is prayed through Surya. That's the case in all the other dvipas, that through a demigod, the Supreme Lord is prayed. And then we have Samali Dvipa, the ocean of liquor, surrounded by the ocean of liquor, and Chandra is the presiding deity there. And then we have Kusha Dvipa, which is surrounded by the ocean of clarified butter, and Agni is the presiding deity there. Then we have Karanchadipa, which is surrounded by the ocean of milk, and Varuna is the presiding deity there. And then we have Shakadipa, which is covered by the ocean of yogurt, and Vishnu is the presiding deity there. And finally, we saw the Pushkaradvipa, which is covered by the ocean of sweet water, and Brahma is the presiding deity there. So the aspect or the geographical aspect of this arrangement is that each ocean or each dvipa which is succeeding the previous dvipa is twice as big. For example, Jambudvipa, then comes the Palakshadvipa, which is twice as big as Jambudvipa. And also the ocean of sugarcane juice is twice, as big, the same size as the Palakshadvipa, which is twice as big as Jambudvipa. Then the next dvipa, which is Samalidvipa, it is twice as big as the previous dvipa. And the corresponding ocean is also the same size. So like this, the size goes on building. And it is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam that each dvipa is surrounded by ocean as if the fort is surrounded by a moat. Moat is a small water body which surrounds the fort. So it is explained like this. So we can try to imagine how it could be, even though it is very difficult to capture this fantastic arrangement by imagination. And then what happens is that after this arrangement of all these different dvipas, it is bordered. Each of the dvipas have their own mountains. And it's not possible to travel from one dvipa to another dvipa. You can't go from Palakshadvipa to Samalidvipa. It's not possible in a normal sense. There are some of them who are empowered beings who can go, like Narada travels all over the place. So there are demigods and empowered beings who can travel through these spaces. But not everybody is given with this potency to travel through these dvipas. And each of these dvipas have their borders, which are defined by different mountain ranges, which are kept in different directions. All this we have seen. And this is all the inhabitable part of the Bhumandala. And this is all surrounded and bordered by a great set of mountains called as Loka Loka. So it is split as Loka and Aloka. Loka means the space which is inhabited, and Aloka means the space which is not inhabited. So there is an equal amount of space, more or less looks like an equal amount of space, which is on the other side of the Loka Loka mountain, which is just solid matter and which is having the surface of gold, and nobody inhabits there. So it is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam that if something falls there, it just becomes indistinguishable in the effulgence of the gold. More or less it becomes like gold. We can say that this is something like, if you want to put a direct equivalent in the so-called modern science, it's something like a black hole. Once something goes in, then it becomes indistinguishable. Something like it, may not be exactly it, but I'm just trying to get some understanding out of it. So the point is that the Aloka part is not inhabited. So there is a clear boundary, which is these Loka Loka mountains. And yesterday's class, it was explained that these mountains are so high that they are more or less high to the extent of these three worlds, Bhur, Bhuva, Suva. So they contain the sunlight within the borders of these mountains. And on the top of these mountains, the four Gajapatis are placed in order to balance the entire system. So this all will be explained later. And now in this particular verse, we are seeing that it is explained that because Sumeru is more or less the center, because it is the center of in the Jambudvipa. So from Sumeru to Loka Loka mountains, what is the distance? It is roughly explained as 1/4 of the diameter of the universe. Then the Aloka is there, which is extending to another distance. And there is a definite gap between the shell of the universe, which is made by the elements. There are five elements which become 10 times more than the previous element, earth, water, fire, like that, Bhumi, Rapo, Anulor, Vayu, Kam. And then there is the Mano, Buddhi, Ahankara, Mano and Buddhi, that mind, intelligence and false ego. Then is the Mahatattva, where Durga is residing. Shrishti, Stiti, Pralaya, Sadhana, Sakti, Reka, Chaye, Vayasya, Bhuvanani, Vivarti, Durga. That Durga who is maintaining Shrishti, Stiti, Pralaya, who is in charge of creation, maintenance and destruction of these three worlds, of this entire 14 verse. She is residing in Mahatattva and she does it according to the desire of Ichchanu Rupam Apiyasya Chateshtatesi. According to the desire of Govinda, the Adi Purusha, the original personality of Godhead. She does this function as Kali, or the energy of time. Kala is the energy, is the time, and Kali is the energy of time. And she is called as Kali because she is the energy of time. So this all previously explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is where we are in a distance calculation. I am not going to get into the astronomy of this distance calculation, because definitely I am not the expert in getting into the astronomy. But I am, when I read this verse, then I was thinking that what could be spoken about this verse. Then I was particularly attracted to the translation of one word, Kavi, which is given by Srila Prabhupada. That if we see the transliteration, it's not so interesting in the sense that it's a straight transliteration. It's by learned scholars, transliteration. But in the translation, Prabhupada explores it and extends it. He says learned scholars who are free from mistakes, illusions, and the propensity to cheat. So this is the full explanation of what it means to be a Kavi. Because in the 26 qualities of devotees, a devotee is also said to be a Kavi. That means a person who is free from mistakes, illusions, and propensity to cheat. As when we see this explanation of who is a Kavi or a learned scholar, and when we contrast it to the scholars of modern day world, we can easily understand that what is the difference between a scholar who is in Krishna consciousness and a normal secular world scholar, we can say. Because the entire material creation, it was previously explained in the third canto and second canto, that it is a product of ahankara, false ego. When ahankara interacts, or when ahankara is agitated by the three modes, mode of goodness, passion and ignorance, all the basic ingredients of material creation were formed by churning of ahankara with the three modes. This is all previously explained. So, what is this ahankara? The ahankara is simply an illusion that what we are not. Ahankara makes us believe that false concept of self. That is why Prabhupada translated ahankara as false ego, which means that there is also a true ego. So there are two egos which are there, which are simultaneously existing. And one ego is it's ignored, and the other ego is predominating. The ego which is generally ignored in the material world is the true ego. And the true ego is clearly explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, what is true ego. The true ego is that Jivera Swarupaha Krishnera Nitya Dasa Krishnera Nitya Shakti Bheda Abheda Prakasha. This is the true ego, or the actual position of the consciousness of the living entity. That the living entity is eternally the servant of Krishna, and he is an energy of Krishna. He is not Krishna. He is an energy of Krishna. Krishnera Nitya Sakti. He is an energy of Krishna. And he is Bheda and Abheda. He is simultaneously one and same and different from Krishna. Bheda Abheda Prakasha. So this is the actual explanation of the true ego of a jiva. But in material world, we are enamored by the false ego, which makes us to think that I am the enjoyer and I am the lord of all I survey. And the product of this false ego is the defects of the mind and material intelligence, because intelligence can also work in two levels. Intelligence can work as spiritual intelligence, and intelligence can also work as material intelligence. The four defects which are generally seen are the product of material intelligence and mind, which is Prabhupada is pointing out, to commit mistake, to be in illusion, propensity to cheat, all these things. So the cheating propensity is very deeply rooted within us, and it manifests as the first manifestation of this cheating propensity is self-cheating. Then it extends to cheating others. The first manifestation is self-cheating. The self-cheating is that I am this body. We think that I am this body. And then in order to establish this thinking, or in order to solidify this idea that I am this body and there is nothing else other than enjoying this body, which is the purpose of life, the whole system of cheating the entire material world unfolds from this basic seed of self-cheating that I am this body. So, if we see scientifically, because everybody has to explain creation. Creation is an observable phenomenon which we see around us. So, if we want to be any sort of authority, we have to give a tangible explanation for this observable phenomenon. If we don't give a tangible explanation for this observable phenomenon, then we cannot become an authority. So naturally, every school of thought or every school of authority tries to give an explanation for creation. So the scientists also try to do it. And each explanation of creation is propelled by its own motivation. The Bhagavata school's explanation of creation is propelled by its proper motivation to please Krishna. This is the way we explain creation. We'll see that little bit later. But the scientific explanation of creation is simply propelled by the self-serving mentality of I am God. But it did not start like this. Because if we see that one of the most tangible or the most basic explanations of the movement of planets and arrangement of planets, which was given, the original seed theory which came in, which was more or less accepted, which is more or less accepted as the basis of the explanation of modern science, is the Kepler's laws of planetary motion. So there was a German scientist called as Kepler, and he framed three laws, how the planets move. We are not going to get into the details of these three laws because I am not interested to give a physics class here. But the point is that the basis of entire modern astrology is in many ways this Kepler's laws. But interestingly, Kepler put these laws or wrote these laws in order to explain an intelligent creation. He did not have these laws and then say that these laws were self-manifest or these laws are manifest by chance. He said that these are laws of planetary motion which are drawn by a super intelligent mind, which is God. So he accepted that if there are laws, then there should be lawmaker. Of course, he was not, he didn't point to Krishna or anyone, but he just accepted a concept of God, a super intelligence. And then based on Kepler's laws came Newton's law of gravity, which is much more familiar with everyone. Everyone knows Newton and everyone knows Newton's law of gravity. So this was based on Kepler's laws. So Newton also accepted God. He said that yes, there is God. In one of the explanations he said that whatever he has discovered, which means that they were already existing, and then he just uncovered it. He said, whatever I have discovered, it is like a small child finding some small shells on the beach, while the whole ocean in front of him is containing huge truths, which the God has and he knows. The super intelligence known as God, he knows all these things. So he was theistic. But then the later scientists, they did not find it convenient to be theistic. Because their idea was that if you give everything to God, then what we will control? See, this is the mind this is the product of false ego. That I want to control. I want to be the controller. I want to be the enjoyer. And everybody should think that I am the well-wisher and I am the maintainer of this entire universe. So So the scientific community started moving towards this direction, especially during the early industrial revolution time. At that time, they were thinking that we want to have industries. Industry means production. Production means that you will continuously produce things. If you produce things, then you need to have a market for it. Without a market, you cannot produce things. This doesn't make sense that you will produce something and then there will be no market for it. And industries generally produce something which we don't want. It is not required for survival. Agriculture produces things which are required for survival. Cow production does things which are required for survival. Normal trades like carpenters, blacksmiths, they do things which are required for survival. Basically, a village economics or a village commerce is simply based on survival economy. That you need this for survival. In a normal village, you would have farmers, you will have some traders, you will have some tradesmen like ironsmith, like carpenter, like goldsmith, tradesmen who would be in the part of the village. And then you would have some brahmanas who would teach, you know, this kind of way, and then some kshatriyas who would panchayat, who would govern the village and things like that. So this is how survival economy works. And in a typical situation of survival economy, you don't have to be like an ass and work for 14 hours. You don't have to work 3 shifts. It's not required. You may work maximum for 5 hours, 6 hours. And it is just sun up, sun down life. When the sun is up, you get up, and when the sun is down, you also go to sleep. So it's a whole natural cycle. So it leaves a lot of time for contemplation. It leaves a lot of time for enrichment of human intellect through spiritual studies. So there's a whole system. But when industrial revolution became the norm and when industries were getting opened, this was completely against their policy. So all the scientists and political leaders of the world, they got together and then they decided that this is not good. That you make a product and then it survives for about 20 years. If you see, I'm just giving an example. Previously, there was a company called as Godrej. Now also it is there. And it used to make fridges in India. If you see the ads of this company about 15 years or 20 years before, they were very proud to say that the grandmother is using the Godrej and it is still working. And then a new bride, she is also taking a Godrej fridge and going. The idea is that till she becomes grandmother, the same fridge will be working. So this is some kind of advertisement which was there before. Because they said that if you make a product, it should at least last for 20 years, one generation, you know. But industrial revolutionists, they did not like this idea. Then what will you do with industry? That if you make a product, it will work for 20 years, people will simply be satisfied with the product, what you make, and then nobody will change anything for 20 years. It's a very bad idea actually. So first thing the industrialists did is that they demolished God. Because God stands for satisfaction. God stands for contentment. God stands for stability. So the idea is that you should not have stability, you should not have satisfaction, you should not have contentment, you should not have happiness. So first thing, kill God. God is not good for industrial revolution. God is against industry. So kill him. So they killed him. They said, okay, no, now no more God. So we can see that Russians, what they did. They used to tell people, the communists, it's very famous. They used to tell people, they used to come with a truckload of bread. And Prabhupada written this, that, and they used to stand in front of churches, then tell them that, okay, go pray to Christ that give me bread, give me bread. They will go and pray to Christ, give me bread, give me bread. And when they come out, then this communist will give bread to everyone. See, we are God, we are giving bread. The person who is inside you are telling, give me bread, he is giving you nothing. We are the ones who are God. So forget God. So this is the whole idea of industrial revolution. Make people forget God. Then what is the next thing which you have to attack? People should never be satisfied. Kill satisfaction in the society. How to kill satisfaction in the society? You should never allow anybody to be content. Kill contentment and happiness in the society. If somebody is happy and if somebody is content, then he will be satisfied. You should never be content. You should never be happy. So the whole thing is designed in such a way that whatever you have, you may have the best of the worlds, but you cannot be happy for more than 6 months, because it will come the, you know what iPhone advertises, the best iPhone yet. They say yet. That means it is not the final iPhone which is best. The best iPhone made yet, which means that I will make something better. So you can't be satisfied with this what you are having. So this is the whole idea. Then the next thing what you have to do is that you have to make people envious. Because envy is the fuel for production. If industry has to run, they may have electricity or they may not have electricity, but they should have envy. When a person is envious of another person, I see that, oh, this Prabhu, he is having this phone, which is the latest. Then I become envious of him. So what I have to do? Then I have to go and buy a phone which is better than this phone which he is having. Then he will become envious, and then he will go and buy some other thing which is better than what I am having. So the whole cycle of industrial production, the basic foundation is envy. You should become envious. In fact, there was one TV brand which was in India, which was openly advertising this. They were saying, neighbors envy, owners pride. This was their tagline of advertisement. They used to say, neighbors envy, owners pride. So you have to become envious. You have to become necessarily envious. So how to make people envious is that you have to corrupt the education. Unless you corrupt the education, people will not become envious. So you have to corrupt the entire process by which knowledge is disseminated. So then they went and systematically worked on the education. They removed education from God. They said, no, you should be secular. By secular, you can be peaceful. Religion is an instrument for divide. So in order to prove that religion is an instrument for divide, they created the terrorists. It's all the creation of the modern political leaders. Terrorists were not born on their own. They were all properly planned. Every terrorist organization, if you see, they were all created for some ulterior political motive. They might have later gone against their own creators. That doesn't matter. But every terrorist who is walking on this earth has been created by an ulterior motive of an envious politician. They did not come on their own. Because terrorism is an industry. It pays. Security is a multi-million dollar industry. Unless you have terrorists, there is no meaning for security industry. You should have all sorts of terrorists. You should have terrorists who will put bomb. You should have terrorists who will write virus. You should have terrorists who will hack into computer systems, so that you can build a whole industry on this. Anyway, coming back to the point that they corrupted the education system very systematically. It's all planned and done. It is not some event by chance, like what they say, creation is by chance. No. The political leaders and the scientists, they teamed together and they planned to corrupt the education system. They wanted people like slaves, like machines. One man who would simply, for the rest of his life, would pull a bolt in the car on an assembly line. This is his whole purpose of life. What is that? Every day he will go for his shift and then he will fix one bolt in a car in an assembly line. That's it. Nothing more. He doesn't know anything more. He has no other knowledge. If you have to fix another bolt, he has to be retrained. That means one more training, one more industry, HRD, that, this whole concept. You should make machines out of schools. This is the idea of education. This is the idea of modern education. And if you want to produce intellectuals out of modern education, See, there are two kinds of products which come out of modern education. There are machines which is coming out of modern education who can't think, and there are intellectuals who are coming out of modern education who are supposed to be thinking. And for them, there is a whole gambit of thinking which is how to extend sense enjoyment. This is called as virtual reality, which means that make people forget what they are. In fact, there is a most popular brand, electronics brand, Japanese brand. They have a tagline. The tagline is called make believe. That's their tagline. Make believe. They are shameless. The modern industrialist and scientist, they are shameless. I have this computer in front of me. You can see that there is one apple which is bitten by someone. And in Christian theology, this apple which is half bitten or quarter bitten is a sign of falling, is a sign of falling to do sinful activity for temptation. This is the first sin, this is the original sin, they call it. So the whole idea of this industry is that we want you to fall for temptation. So much so that you simply identify with the object which they produce. That is why it is called as iPhone. It is not called as my phone. It is called as iPhone. That means I am phone. That is my identity. I am phone. So the whole process of industrialization simply is aimed at creating a culture of fear and envy. Even though they sugarcoat it with words called as customer satisfaction, team spirit, cooperation, environmental awareness, all these things. It looks so beautiful when they are all written and you know they say customer satisfaction is our motive. Nonsense. If the customer gets satisfied, you will not survive. You have to simply close down 90% of the industry. So, actual motive is customer dissatisfaction. Actual motive is to dump everything which you don't need into your house so that first of all you will start requiring a big house. Because when we were shifting, I saw that we require so many things. We have accumulated so many things in our 15-20 years of grihastha life. Probably some of them we never used it for 2-3 years. Only when we packed, we came to know that these things are there with us. But at one point of time, we felt an overwhelming urge to buy these things because we thought that our life would not go forward with these things. So this is the work of advertisement industry. The whole mandate which is given to advertisement industry is that make the guy think in 15 seconds that he cannot live without something which he never wants. And millions of dollars is being spent for this. Millions of dollars is being spent for this. One of the highest paid industries is the advertisement industry. That you have to capture the imagination of a person in 15 seconds and make him think that I will die if I don't have this cosmetic. Or I will go to hell if I don't use this shaving cream. Whatever, you know. So there is a systematic corruption of the human life which was planned during Industrial Revolution. Why? Because the scientists decided that they don't want to have to do anything with God. And they decided that we need to have industries to replace God. So then they have to develop the whole idea, the whole culture, a whole civilization which is simply atheistic. And they want to call themselves as scholars. So this is the product of a scholar who simply wants to corrupt the whole world. So what is their ultimate aim of the scientist? They want to prove that God is matter. This is their ultimate aim. That is why if you Google for a particular word or a phrase, which is called as God particle. You know, there is a word which is called as God particle. There are Nobel prizes which are ready to be given for the person who will find God particle. So this is their ultimate research. They want to reduce God to matter, and they want to prove to the whole world that God is matter, nothing but matter. So they are doing this whole research for God particle. So this is their idea. And by this whole thing, they want to sideline religion. They want to say that religion is a tool which was made by man. God is an imagination of man in order to simply control the society by fear. This is what they are making the younger generation to believe. They tell, oh, these are all stories. They are just there to put fear in your mind. But actually, who is putting fear in people's mind? These scientists, they are putting fear into the minds of people. With every terrorist attack, with every war, with every uncertainty, the security industry is growing. And it is growing simply by fear. And their investment is fear. Sometimes I am so cynical about these things that I tend to think that the entire terrorist organizations are funded by security industries. I normally think like this, that you know, they just take a portion of their profits and then they give it to the terrorist. Maybe by different channels and things like that, so that they can create more and more atrocities and their business can grow. It could be their strategic planning for increasing their business. So, you know, there are so many different ways. So the ultimate aim of the scientist is that one should never be satisfied and one should never be happy. But if you compare this raw or dissected view of modern scientific advancement in civilization to the civilization of Krishna consciousness and the explanation of creation by Srimad Bhagavatam, we can very easily see that the culture of Krishna consciousness wants to establish a society which is satisfied, which is happy, and which is meaningful, which knows the purpose of its existence. Because the creation is explained in Bhagavatam in such a way that the actual purpose of creation is understood. Creation, or material creation especially, and also the spiritual creation, but more so the material creation, is a fantastic display of unparalleled love of God. This is what is material creation. And Bhagavatam clearly explains this to us. Because we are conditioned souls. We have forgotten Krishna. We are simply thinking, bewildered by the philosophers and this atheistic scientist, that this entire facility is there for our imagination, for our enjoyment. And we are thinking how we are making plans throughout our life that how we can enjoy parts of this whole creation. But this creation, when we read through Bhagavatam, when we read through the fifth canto, we can see how beautifully creation is unfolding. Of course, there are many technical matters like this verse, which talks about the distance between Sumeru and Loka mountains. But the underlying principle of explanation of creation in Bhagavatam is simply to make us understand that this material creation is a fantastic display of love of God for the jiva. Because we wanted to enjoy all these facilities away from Krishna. And unfortunately, unless Krishna himself provides these facilities, we cannot enjoy these facilities. Even if Krishna provides these facilities, unless Krishna by his own mercy makes us to forget that we are not, that we are parts of Krishna and our original position, we cannot enjoy these facilities. So Krishna has gone so much out of the way. He creates a fantastic place which is so beautiful. We are reading about these different, these varshas, these lokas, and how they are all like heavenly planets, and how there is so much of, enjoyment and beauty and that and this, and big trees, fragrant fruits. Somewhere one whole fruit, it falls down and it makes a full river of mango juice. What are so many things, you know? Like fantastic creations, fantastic explanations. Explanations which capture the imagination and mind of the human intellect. But all this for what? Krishna wants it? No. Krishna doesn't want these things. He has his own place. Chintamani prakarashadmashu kalpavriksha laksha vrateshu shurabhira vipalayantam lakshmi sahasra satasambrama sevyamanam govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. He has his place which is millions of times more fantastic than this. A place which is made or built of touchstones. We don't even have one touchstone in the material world. But Krishna has his place which is fully built with touchstones. And we are craving for youth. And sometimes we see in different varshas that they have youth for a long time. But it is not eternal. But they will also die. So in one sense, the whole explanation of creation in Srimad Bhagavatam is an expanded explanation of this one verse in Bhagavad Gita, which says, Abrahma Bhuvanal Loka Punaravartino Arjuna Mam Upetyata Kaunteya Punarjanmana Vidyate. He says that in the 14 planetary systems, starting from Brahma Loka to the last Patala Loka, all places are places of misery where repeated birth and death takes place. And when one returns to the abode of the Lord, then there is no more misery of birth and death. Just to expand this, the whole fifth canto of Bhagavatam explains the entire creation. That how this Brahma to Bhuvanal Loka, all these 14 planetary systems are arranged. And what are the facilities of enjoyment. How they will be ultimately finished off at one point of time by the influence of time. And how we will be subjected to death and rebirth. And what is the method to come out of this cycle residing in these planetary systems? So it's a very wonderful scientific and thorough explanation of creation, which gives us the idea of which makes us ultimately appreciate this person, Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is in one sense so great that he can create such fantastic things. But in other sense, he is so sweet that even if we don't love him, and even if we don't want to love him, he facilitates that idea that I don't want to love you. And then he creates a whole facility by which we can try to enjoy without loving him, while incorporating the mechanism by which we can also understand that we cannot enjoy without loving him. It's a very complicated thing which Krishna has done in material creation. This is something which is super fantastic. And this is how Bhagavatam explains and unfolds the creation with all its technicalities and all the numbers and different verses and references to astronomy and things like that. But when we understand this basic principle that this whole material creation is an expression of love from this person who is waiting for us to reciprocate, then we would have understood the mood with which creation is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. And to practically do this, we can see in this verse there is a lot of Sanskrit explanation which is given from Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's purport. Probably very few of us would be able to understand that. But to practically understand that creation is expression of love of Krishna, we have to simply take shelter of Srila Prabhupada and his books, and we should simply read Srila Prabhupada's books. Then we will be able to understand that this creation in a very tangible and in a very digestible way, and the way it should be properly understood. So with this, I want to close the class. Are there any comments, questions? Yes, ma'am.
About how in this society, how that that system is very well planned to do so many things. And we can see that also some of the things are coming through the dam. And in that moment, I was remembering Parikshit Maharaj walking around his kingdom, looking, overlooking what was happening in his kingdom. And he saw that the Shudra was cutting the legs of the bull. And that was Kali, who came to his kingdom. My question is because yesterday I make a video of how the bulls in our Goshala are sick of their feet, some disease, they cannot walk. And although they are suffering of this disease in the feet, the workers, by instructions of course, they are beating the bulls, although they have so much pain in their legs, they are beating, pushing hardly, and the bull hardly is standing up, and they take to work pulling the car. My question is, do you think that that is the door how, from where Kali is coming to the dam?
Yeah, see, Kali has its influence everywhere, whether we like or we don't like, okay? This is the work of Kali, that Kali has its influence everywhere. We cannot say that just because we have an organization which is meant simply to fight the influence of Kali, it doesn't mean that we are immune to Kali, the influence of Kali. It doesn't mean like that. Unless we follow the process, unless we are true to the teachings of the Acharya, it's not an automatic insurance that I am in ISKCON and I am free from the influence of Kali. There's no automatic insurance like that. One has to understand this. There's no automatic insurance for this, that I am in ISKCON, I am immediately protected. No. We are in ISKCON means what? Then comes the question that what it means to be in ISKCON. Just you become life member of ISKCON, you pay some money and get a card with your photograph on it and some details, so you are ISKCON. Or you get initiated from a spiritual master by following certain rules and regulations, and now that you are initiated, you are in ISKCON. What it means to be in ISKCON? This is a very deep question. One has to analyze it properly. That what it means to be in ISKCON simply means that you will be a follower of the follower of Srila Prabhupada. You will be Dasana Das. Will be servant of the servant. A servant of the servant simply means that in all terms you will follow the vision and the instruction of the Acharya. If the vision and instruction of the Acharya is ignored, either institutionally or individually, then we are no longer in ISKCON. Even though we may be physically present within a compound, or we may be physically living within a community, doesn't matter. What matters is that how much you are aligned to the vision and the instruction of the Acharya. Of course, living within a compound or being in the association of devotees always constantly reminds you that you have to align to this vision. Okay, that's what it is meant. Association is meant for that. That is, it's meant to constantly remind you that there is a gap between the Acharya's vision and what we are doing, so that we have to align with this vision. But as long as we don't make any conscious efforts to align with the vision of the Acharya, then we are open to the influence of Kali. So this is the fact. We have to realize this. Prabhupada said that his disciples, I'm just saying what Prabhupada said, but this also means that everyone else who is in ISKCON, that they are not sufficiently afraid of Maya. We have to be sufficiently afraid of Maya. We cannot take Maya for granted. We cannot say that, okay, I am chanting my 16 rounds, I am immune from Maya. No. How we are chanting our 16 rounds? What we are doing as a process of Krishna consciousness? Are we getting purified? And how to measure that we are getting purified? Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayati Asavairagyam Jnanam Chayataha Itukam. Is Vairagya and Jnana manifesting within us by the practice of devotional service? If jnana and vairagya is not manifesting within us as a practice of devotional service, then automatically the lower modes will take over. Then whatever you say will happen. These are all details. That some bulls are being mistreated in the goshala. Important detail. I'm not saying it's not very important. I'm saying it's an important detail. But they are details. But the principle is that there is no proper practice of devotional service. This is the principle. Because devotional service means that it has its symptoms. It has its progression. It's a science. Ado shraddha tata sadhu sangha tata bhajana kriya anartha nivritti nishtha ruchi asakti bhava prema. There is a progression which is defined by the acharyas. There are symptoms of this progression. It's explained starting from in Bhagavatam, first canto, starting from the shloka Shunvatam Swakata Krishna and ending with the shloka Vidyate Hridaya Granthis. So there's a whole sequence which is described, the symptoms of this progression. Individually, we have to check that whether the symptoms of this progression are manifesting within our heart or not. When people become responsible, because devotional service means responsibility. Without responsibility, there is no devotional service. Of course, Krishna takes responsibility. Spiritual master takes responsibility. But it is not that I can do whatever I want and spiritual master will take responsibility and take me back home, back to Godhead. I am equally responsible for what I am doing. So it's a cooperative effort between Krishna, spiritual master and the disciple. So disciple also has to be responsible. He has to follow through the process properly. When that is not done, then naturally there is a vacuum which is created. And in the material world, there is nothing called vacuum. If you don't fill your day with Krishna, you have to necessarily fill the balance of the day which you are not filled with Krishna with Maya. If you are filling 1% with Krishna, then you have 99% Maya. If you are filling 99% with Krishna, still you have 1% Maya. It has to be understood clearly. So these are all manifest. These are all details which are manifestation of not filling our mission with 100% Krishna consciousness. So that's the disease. That's the root cause. So one has to work on that disease. Of course, we have to address the symptoms also. I'm not saying that we should not address the symptoms. Equally important is that we should also address the disease. That we should see that something is wrong. It's okay?
That if we are not practicing serious spiritual life, that will happen. Maya will come. In the case of the association between devotees, if we do an aparada, any Vaishnava, we know that we can chant well our japas like that. In the case of the with chaos, someone maybe doing some service, devotional spiritual life, but soon after some aparadas is being done to chaos, what is the result?
Yeah, of course. You know, there's whole things explained in the Shastra that if the cows are not happy, what happens? And Bhagavatam is filled with references from Srila Prabhupada, where Prabhupada says, talks about the importance of cow protection. It's a big topic. Sometimes it is not clearly understood. At least it's my feeling that cow protection is not clearly understood by our modern ISKCON. That cow protection means not spending money to protect cow. Cow protection is a whole culture. It's not that you get donation, put the cows in some place and protect it. It doesn't work like that. Cow protection means it's a full culture where cows and bulls are positively engaged and they protect us. We don't have to protect them. They will protect us if they are positively engaged. This is a full culture. It's a culture which I was telling before, that the culture of the village. Because Krishna is a village boy. Okay? And his culture is a village culture. A culture where cows are there, bulls are there, bulls are engaged, cows are engaged. Prabhupada said very clearly that if you don't engage the bulls, you will eat them. Okay? We may not eat them, but we may neglect them. That's the inference of that word, eating. It may not become so gross that we cut them and eat them like the materialist, but it will become as gross as neglecting them. Unless we engage them, there's no question of protection. These all are of course, in between, as when we, till we have a full program where we can engage them and things like that, we have to at least protect them by collecting donation. But that is not the ultimate cow protection. Cow protection cannot go on like this, that you collect donation and keep them in a certain place and then protect them. It's all an interim measure of cow protection. It's important measure. I'm not saying that it should not be done. It should be done. In the absence of nothing, this is much better to do it like that. But ultimately, cow protection means engaging cows, engaging bulls productively and getting protected by their mercy. This is ultimate cow protection. Till that is organizationally accepted, and till we take it up as a full scheme of establishment of Varnashrama, because establishment of Varnashrama has these aspects, because you need a Kshatriya. If you bring a Kshatriya, then he will protect cows, he will protect the women, he will protect old men, he will protect children, he will protect the Brahmanas, he will protect the invalid. This is Kshatriya job. Kshatriya will protect them. How he will protect them is explained in Prithumaraj Charitra, that protection means engaging them productively. This is called protection. Not protection means that you keep them in one corner and lock them. Protecting women does not mean that you put all the women in one room and lock them and then say that, oh, I am protecting women. No, it doesn't like that. It doesn't work like that. Same way, protecting cows means that you don't put all the cows in one place and lock them and say, oh, I am protecting cows. No, it doesn't work like that. For that you require Kshatriya, trained Kshatriya, who can protect them. Protect them means engage them according to their occupational duty, according to their inclination. You engage them, that is protection. Swadharma Abhyasanam is protection. Because when people do Swadharma Abhyasanam, two things happens. One is that they are satisfied, and then they automatically satisfy Vishnu also. Atapumir Vijashreshta Varnashrama Vibhagashaha Swanushtitasya Dharmasya Samsiddhi Haritoshana. That simply by practicing their propensity in devotional service, they will simply satisfy the Supreme Lord. So this way they can progress. And they can go to the higher stage of not having Varnashrama as a template to protect them, and simply filling their life with the 9 activities of devotional service. That's a later stage. That will come, but it will come after we are protected by the system of Varnashrama. So this is a whole big topic. It's a big discussion, and it's already time. So I think we should stop here. Dantraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Premanande.